Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Crankcast. This is Season 2, Episode 6. I'm your host Tudor and today we're going to talk about, you guessed it, motorcycles. Even more motorcycles. Now, if you enjoy this series, you can follow us on Instagram at crank.it. Also check out our main channel, Crank It, which are the more sort of cinematic videos. This is just a side thing we do. But that being said, let's jump straight into the main topics of today because we have a few news topics. And we also have story time. Story time at Crank It. So, just going quickly over the news topics, we have Guy Martin being back to his speed record attempt. Android Auto will ship on Africa Twins in some places. We have new Triumph Bonnevilles, or we will have new Triumph Bonnevilles. The Royal Enfield Himalayan has two new colors. What else? Indian overhauls its chief platform, so an entire sort of cheap line of bikes. Whatever. And then electric bikes will continue getting a US tax credit in 2021. And finally, we're going to top it off by sprinkling some racing on top. And we're going to talk about how, or some lesser known facts about how the Isle of Man actually started. It's a really historical race. It's been there since like forever. And so yeah, I think it's interesting to see how it actually started. But that being said, this is the recap. The recap is over. So now it's time to get into our actual topics. So let's go into the first one and possibly one of the most exciting ones. Guy Martin. We probably definitely know about this guy, but he is back in 2021 for his speed record attempt. So if you don't know what the speed record attempt is, basically it's a 1 mile speed record. The top speed in that 1 mile is the speed record. He already reached about 270 miles per hour, I think. But of course, he was Guy Martin, so that can't be enough, can it? So his goal this time is 300 miles per hour in 1 mile. That's a lot. In kilometers per hour, it's not quite 500, but it's a lot. It's a lot. So he plans to do this on his custom Suzuki Hayabusa. Now, saying that that bike is a Busa is a bit of an understatement for it. I mean, sure, initially, in its conception, it did start as a Hayabusa, and then it just went down. I mean, the fairings are completely changed. It barely looks like a motorcycle. It definitely looks like something that's attempting a speed record. It also has slightly tuned engine. So Guy Martin slapped a turbo on it. Okay, Turbo Busa, whatever. I mean, that's actually a pretty popular conversion kit. Except he's making 830 horsepower. And those are not ponies. Those are proper stallions. 800 horsepower in a bike. I can't even imagine. And it doesn't even look to be like that stretched. Or like the rear swing arm isn't that far from stock. Or at least not from the pictures that I saw. That's incredible. That's mad. And this is Guy Martin. If there is one guy to do it, he's definitely the guy. The guy that actually broke the Nürburgring road, led the lap record for a van. It's the same guy. Now, about the record attempt, Guy actually had the most Guy Martin-like comment ever. So he said that it's not going to make a big thing out of it. It's not a big deal, you know. He's just going to bring his family, his dad, a cup of tea. No big deal. Yeah. Going 300 miles per hour in 1 mile, not a big deal. No. Breaking that world record, nah. Not a big deal. Well, this is what you say when you're Guy Martin, basically. But yeah, so we can expect in 2021 to see him attempting the record. And who knows? Maybe we'll see him actually finishing the record and actually beating the record. That would be amazing. So yeah, I'm excited about what Guy is going to do in this upcoming year. Now for something a little more mundane, I guess you could call it, going back to Honda, because that's interesting. No, on a serious note though, Android Auto is coming finally to the Honda Africa Twins in Europe only. So how this will work, it's going to be a dealer update for existing Africa Twins. So if you have an existing Africa Twin, one of the later models, the 1100cc and up bikes, if you have one of those, there will probably be available an upgrade from Honda to Android Auto to your infotainment system. I mean, do you call it the infotainment in bikes? I don't know, whatever. But yeah, you will have to actually go to the dealer. It's not like the old Goldwings, 2018 Goldwings, when they got the update that you like got a USB stick and you could do it yourself. Not really here. You have to walk your bike up to a dealer. But still, you're going to get stuff like Google Maps, music, messages, and all of that good stuff. Android Auto has actually first appeared on the 2018 Goldwings. So the Africa Twin is not the first bike to get this. Now, that being said, it's good that they have it. And if you don't have an Android phone, and if you're on the dark side of Apple, like I am, Apple CarPlay will come as standard on all 2021 Africa Twins. So don't worry, you're good, you're covered. This is the Honda news. Going forward to something that launched, or that will launch, it's a bit more exciting. We're talking about teasers again, because, oh, we love seeing bikes that we got no clue about. So, Triumph did quite a few major releases this past month, and they're not stopping, because they just teased a new lineup of Bonneville. So, that includes the T100, T150 or 120, is it? I don't remember exactly, I don't really know that range that well, but they tease the entire family as an update. They're not going to be like groundbreaking, revolutionary stuff, but they're going to be a fairly big update, or at least this is what we expect from Triumph. So we only have a teaser, and as usual from Triumph teasers, not much shown. Yeah, we don't know much about it, but we do know that something is coming out. It's sort of the same with the Speed Triple. They released a teaser, you could see the headlights, and that's about it. Yeah, you could see the headlights. That's all you could really see about the bike. This is sort of the same case here, but what we do know though. So in this little teaser, they showcase an entire family of Bonnevilles, which means it's probably a general upgrade. So it's an upgrade to the Bonneville platform in general. So this sort of incremental upgrades. Mentioning that word again, all of these upgrades will probably take effect to every member of the family, which is cool. Now, we don't know much about the upgrades, but from the teaser, we do know that there might be a new instrument cluster. I'm really curious how they're gonna do this one, bring it. And I think they have an app like My Triumph, so this might be actually Bluetooth compatible with the application. And Triumph also said that they have some performance improvements and some refinements. I'm curious to see. I mean, look, the Bonneville series was never sort of the performance master. It was never about going fast. It was about looking cool while going decently quickly at sometimes. I'm totally expecting the range to be, like, its ethos to be the exact same. But we'll see what Triumph actually launches, probably sometimes in the next few weeks. Now, speaking of updates, there's another manufacturer that has quite some updates, and we are talking about Royal Enfield. We have their Himalayan, and they released two incredible new colors. Okay, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but so we do have a small update to the Royal Enfield Himalayan. And true, two new colors are part of that update. And to be fair, they're actually kind of sleek. I like them. I generally like those colors. Yeah, you should totally check them out. But yeah, we have two colors. So if you don't know what the Royal Enfield is, because maybe it's not the most popular bike everywhere, it's a small CC adventure bike. So I think of a 400cc bike. Produces somewhere around 25 horsepower, so definitely not powerful, but it's a single cylinder thumper. It's easy to use. It's cheap, quite dirt cheap, actually. It's not that technologically advanced, which in some cases is good. So if Kawasaki was to produce the original KLR 650 in 2021, that would be the Royal Enfield Himalayan. Okay, maybe the build quality isn't quite up to that standard, but they're not far. They've actually gotten decently good along the years. And just to prove this, there's another YouTube channel, so I'm going to do a little bit of a shout-out from a small channel to a big one, to Ichiboot. So she's a girl from the Netherlands that has been traveling around the world on Royal Enfield Himalayans. That bike has seen everything a bike could possibly see. There's probably no other Himalayan that has ever gone through what she put that Himalayan through. But yeah, this just shows how good of a bike can that Royal Enfield be. Now, going back to the update, so we have a new seat and some new tank braces. The seat is supposed to be more comfortable, so, I mean, that's good. Adding comfort to a 400cc single-cylinder thumper is always good, and it's always welcome, in my opinion. What else do we have? So we have a new instrument cluster, which is the same as the old instrument cluster, with one small exception. So they added another digital, I guess, dial, if you want to call it. You would have your regular Royal Enfield Himalayan dashboard, and then to the right of it, they added a new round gauge. What's interesting about it? So this one is digital. I think I mentioned this a few times so far, but this one, first of all, this one is digital. And second, it looks like it actually has four instruments, because none of them are the same size. It looks like they literally had like a four parts bins with four different types of instruments, and they just, hey, we need a dashboard for the Himalayan. What do we have here? Huh? Four buckets? Dump them in. Dump the buckets in. Dump the buckets. Seriously though, so all of the gauges, they're round-ish, so they're not all circles, but they do have round corners. They're all different sizes. They're not symmetrical. If you have any problems with seeing asymmetrical stuff, then don't get an Enfield, because the dashboard is going to drive you crazy. But I mean, look, when you're paying the amount of money you pay for a Himalayan, you can't really complain about stuff like that, honestly. But yeah, this is Royal Enfield, and now we're going to go back to America, because Indian overhauls their chief platform for the 100th anniversary. We're going to go pretty quickly for this one. I'm not that into these types of bikes. Let's just quickly go for them. So they receive updates like LED lights and the keyless go systems. That's cool, especially for a cruiser. I love not having to take my key out of my pocket and put it back in my pocket, blah, blah, blah. The key can always stay on me in some pocket, and I never have to get it out, and it's amazing. I love that, especially in a cruiser. They lowered the seat height, which is definitely good. I mean, it's not a beginner bike, but hey, a lower seat height will help anyone in maneuver the bike. And this is one of the things they said they addressed. So the bike now, even though it's a big, heavy pig, let's be fair, it's a big twin, but this one should be way more approachable, or at least that's what the Indian says about their bike. The bike is actually lighter, so the wheelbase is actually shorter, which should make it turn easier, should make it easier to handle, to maneuver, even at lower speeds. That's great. And what I wanted to mention, I actually had in my notes here, that they actually seem to have quite a nice instrument cluster. So it's just a simple circle in the middle, which, of course, is not the first bike. I mean, a friend has an Intruder 800 back in this garage, and even that has like a center-mounted round dial. But what's cool about it is this one is digital. And so it has a few modes, but one of the modes, for example, can show you like the maps, can show you music controls and stuff like that, which is pretty handy. And to be fair, this is a bike that's made to be customizable, and the Indian actually mentioned that. They wanted to keep it simple in a way so that the aftermarket and the customization market can grow. And I applaud them for that. This is definitely one of those cases where I think they thought it right. And this sort of minimalist dashboard can allow you to go wherever you want with it, and that's cool, I think. And now to get the final item on this list, we're going to talk about electric bikes in the USA and their tax credits for 2021. So, ever since I hope I'm not wrong on this, but I think I remember it was 2019, electric bikes have had a bit of an incentive to buy in the USA in the form of tax credit. And this tax credit will continue in 21. So the conditions are as follows. So the credit itself can be 10% of your bike up to a maximum of $2,500. Now, realistically speaking, given how much electric bikes cost, it's probably going to be $2,500. For example, a Livewire is more in the ballpark of like $30,000. So yeah, maximum 2,500. Maybe you can find like the lower end zeros. Maybe you can get one under 25,000. But still, that's where it's going to be, basically. Now, you might argue that, well, 10% when you factor in the cost of an electric bike is not that much. It's not that big of an incentive. And I agree, honestly. Given that some other countries offer for cars, I don't see why they wouldn't be able to, or why they wouldn't want to do something similar with bikes. Now, that being said, money is probably fairly tight, because one of the minimum conditions for you as a manufacturer to be part of this sort of, to be able to offer this tax credit to your clients, is that the bike has to go a minimum of 45 miles per hour. Now, in the case of Harley-Davidson with Livewire, that's obviously not an issue. All Zero motorcycle models go over, like the top speed is over 45 miles per hour. But there are some other sort of mopeds and electric scooter companies that do not have this feature. They can't go over 45, so those are not incentivized. Now, this makes you wonder, why? Why not? Isn't this also green transport? Isn't putting someone from a gas scooter to on an electric scooter, isn't that great for the environment? Yes, it is. I'm guessing this is more for a show, really, than for actual environmental impact. If they want to do that, yeah, offer it to all sort of electric motorcycles, even if they go slower than 45 miles an hour. But who am I and what do I know at the end of the day? But yeah, this was the news. To be fair, this week wasn't the most exciting, or at least I wasn't the most excited when thinking about this news. But that being said, the second part of this is going to be exciting, because we are talking about the Isle of Man TT, and oh yes, baby, we are doing this. So, a lot of you might be a bit familiar with the more modern history of the Isle of Man TT, right? So from 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, so on and so forth. This is a period of time that it's actually fairly well known in TT history. But what's lesser known is, how did this race start? How did it begin? So the original idea to talk about this came from watching a small sort of Dakar documentary of Thierry Sabine and how he started the Dakar. And I was like, wait, how was the Isle of Man created? Because it's on the same par in terms of epicness as the Dakar. So it has to be an interesting story. And indeed, it actually truly is. It all kind of started in 1903. So in 1903, the Great Britain introduces a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit all over the place. There was nowhere you could go more than 20 miles per hour. So that obviously stopped all sort of motorsport events, all street racing, everything related to that. So you couldn't do that in Britain. But some cheeky organizers went to the Isle of Man, which, if you don't know, they're a bit separate from Great Britain. And so they asked them, hey, can we hold a race here? And not much later, it was approved. And they were given a 50-mile track, I think, or something along those lines. The initial track was actually fairly long. And the first recorded event of the Isle of Man TT, it wasn't called the Isle of Man TT, it was actually called the Gordon Bennett Car Trial on the Isle of Man. This is the granddaddy, the granddaddy of today's Isle of Man TT. But as you might have guessed from the name, this was not a motorcycle race. This was just a car race. This was the pilot to see if it works, right? If people would attend it, if they had audience. And guess what? When you outlaw all types of racing in Britain, well, yes, it did work. And so the next year in 1904... In 1905, they introduced motorcycles. So now you have car categories and car groups, and you had bike groups. There was an issue, though, in 1904. Have you ever seen a bike from 1904? It looks a bit more like a bicycle than it does look like a motorcycle. And so the issue of that is that the Isle of Man, like, yes, it is an island, but it's actually fairly, like, wavy in terms of its hills. And so, believe it or not, bikes couldn't actually get up some of those hills. And that was a bit of an issue, as you might imagine, because you can't really have a race where a motorized race where riders had to push their bikes up hills. Obviously. And consider that back then, bikes didn't have gears. You had one gear, and you'd better deal with it, because that's all you have. So, yeah, bikes don't really come hill, so this is why they took a bit of a break, and they only really got back in 1911. That's when motorcycle racing started back on the Isle of Man. And they started back with a bit of a catch. So you know how we complain that these days racing, it's all about fuel economy, and why would they care? Racing is all about going head to head. Well, what if I told you that back then, in 1911, it wasn't any different? Because the Isle of Man had a few classes. And for two of them, for example, bikes had to do an average of 90 miles per gallon and 75 miles per gallon for the more sort of higher spec bikes. Yes, you had to finish first, but you had to finish with the proper miles per gallon. And this was done in order to show people the road touring nature of motorcycles, or at least this is what it was thought back in those times. Now, of course, it would be stupid if motorcycles have an economy race, but back then it was all about promotion and all about promoting this new type of vehicle. And yeah, they imposed these. And if you think about it, racing with 90 miles per gallon, that sounds good in theory if you just hear these. But yeah, what you have to realize is that, yes, these days it's really nice asphalt for houses and stuff like that. But back then it was not that way. It was definitely not that way, because it was taking part on cart and horse tracks in the beginning. The Isle of Man didn't have the greatest asphalt out there. And so riders would race on the dirt, and that wouldn't be the biggest issue until you think that back then, like, herding cattle, for example, was a big thing, and everyone was doing it for survival. And so the way it worked is that riders had to open the gates and close the gates. Okay, to be fair, not all of them did, but in the rules, it was mentioned that the duty of the first rider is to open every gate he encounters and leave it open. And the duty of the last rider racing was to stop and close all the gates along the way so that, I don't know, animals didn't escape, so they left everything in place as it should have been. Now, if you take this to modern days, you would be amazed. Like, you have to open your own gates and close them? Like, that's not fair. But it didn't really matter, because in the early 1900s, this is how you roll if you want to go racing. In 1924, in 1914, I'm sorry, this is when the last race happened until Isle of Man had to take a break. World War One became a thing, and unfortunately, nothing with it, all of the country's resources had to go there. So, no more money, no more just fooling around. No, baby, they were at war. Luckily, they did return in 1920. And in 1920, the roads were better. They somehow got better, and the lap record got better. And in 1920, they managed to do an amazing 55.63 miles per hour. That's amazing. That's the average speed on the track. Now, that was not a racetrack, and imagine the bikes they had in 1920. Being able to do such a feat, such a speed in such a bike is amazing, in my opinion. But yeah, skipping a bit through the history, because we're slowly getting into the more modern stuff. In the late 50s and 60s, that was the golden era. That was when the true duels came around. This was when notorious bike racers came to race the Isle of Man as well, to prove that they were what the results said they were. And so that's when the bike race really blew up. And that's when, actually, a little manufacturer you might have heard of came from Japan and actually won. And I'm talking about Honda. So, I think in the 60s it was, Honda participated for the first time in the Isle of Man, and then they also managed to win it, being the first ever Japanese manufacturer to win a TT. Now, ever since, as you might probably know, they had plenty of wins. I mean, you always see on the Isle of Man a lot of like Hondas, Kawasaki's, Suzuki's, Yamaha's. I don't really see that many Eurobikes over there, mostly because some of them used to not be that reliable. And when you have a, like a 180-mile race, reliability is also important, not just straight-out performance. In 1961, Mike Hillwood did a bit of a thing, and so he won three classes of the TT in the same week. So he won the 125cc class, the 250cc class, he won those with Honda, and if I'm not mistaken, he won the senior class with Norton, I think it is. So if you're not familiar, senior class is like the big boys. This is how it started. So we had the junior and the senior class, and they kept that sort of name. So now senior class is not sort of like the slower veterans that have been that are old or something. No, senior class is the best of the best. If you are competing for the win, you are in the senior class, most likely. So yeah, that was one point in history, 1961, when history was made at Isle of Man TT, the first guy who wins three classes in the same race the same week. And then we get to the more modern part, as you all know, with Joey Dunlop, I think. Then we have John McGuinness later on. We even have Guy Martin. We have a lot of racers, and there were a lot of fierce battles in here. And there are some notorious riders, and I especially put the emphasis on John McGuinness, who ruled this race, who were the kings. You couldn't dethrone them, and they had some amazing, amazing records. Like 150 plus miles an hour, I think. That's not top speed, that's average speed. That's what makes it really impressive. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed a little bit of the history of the inception of the Isle of Man race. I definitely had some fun reading into this and finding out this stuff. I didn't know about it. I didn't know riders had to close gates, for example. That's still amazing to me. But yeah, this was this episode. Oh. I hope you thoroughly enjoyed it. Now we are going to release a new video. I'm gonna tease it here. It's on why motorcycle video games suck. That video is gonna come out on the main Crankit channel, so if you're into bikes, check it out. And then we'll have some really exciting stuff coming on the main channel over the next few weeks, basically. Also, you can follow us on Instagram at crank.it. And yeah, rate, if you like this podcast, give it a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast or wherever you might be listening to this, Spotify. I don't know. I don't judge. But yeah, as I said, make sure to follow our main channel. It's Crankit on YouTube, K-R-A-N-K-I-T. And until next time, have a good one.